Whether you're the casual hockey observer or the epitome of a rabid Hawks fan, Blackhawks Live answers all your questions.
You know, they obviously turned up the heat on us, and we just kind of clammed up. I didn't think we were moving our feet.
Joe Brand delivers the news, notes, and everyday gossip from the Madhouse on Madison. Here's Joe Brand.
An eventful 24 hours for the Chicago Blackhawks. Not only did they finally pick up another home win and make that two wins over their last three games now, we're going to see yet another piece of the Blackhawks rebuild, possibly by this weekend. I'm Joe Brand. This is Blackhawks Live. Our producer is Jack Heinrich. Hawks' next game is tomorrow night against the Anaheim Ducks. It'll be game two of a four-game homestand. You look at the Hawks' upcoming schedule, and there are some winnable games for the Hawks. And I mentioned a lot leading into this stage that, no, the Hawks are not in a position to look at games and say, yeah, that could be a win, that could be a win, that could be a win. But you look at a few of them, two games against the San Jose Sharks, two games against the Anaheim Ducks. Even the playoff teams that the Hawks are facing over the next month aren't quite of the caliber of Colorado, Vancouver, Winnipeg. They are facing some heavy hitters like Vegas, Dallas, and Carolina down the end. Actually, that's kind of like the last batch of games in the regular season. But it is a much different strength of schedule for the Hawks with their remaining 17 games. Now, that does kind of affect the reverse standings. Right now, the Hawks are tied with the San Jose Sharks with 39 points, but because the Hawks have already played two more games than the Sharks, they're slightly below in the win percentage, which, yes, would put the Hawks at the best odds for landing the number one overall pick once again, and that prize seems to be Macklin Celebrini. But there is a lot of hockey to be played and direct competition between the Hawks and the Sharks. We will get into that a little bit later because there was a very fun, good game at the United Center that we'd like to recap, but also just more on Landon Slaggart, who officially signed a deal with the Hawks heading into yesterday's game. His season with Notre Dame just ended on Saturday. He was the third pick by the Hawks in 2020, played 4 years with the Fighting Irish, and actually finished as the captain. Picked up a career-high 31 points in 36 games in his final year. In fact, in the final game of his collegiate career, a loss to the Michigan Wolverines that ended his season, he had a goal and an assist. I've heard a lot of good things about his game, and in fact, here's some sound that we played from Kyle Davidson just last Blackhawks Live about Landon Slaggart.
Well, he had a great year offensively, especially goal scoring. Kind of found a little bit of a little extra goal scoring punch, which I think is good for his confidence. But again, being a leader there and getting a lot of time and you know, playing against some pretty good teams in the Big Ten, it's great experience. But you know, he just continued that style of play, the relentless high compete style that he's always had, and then add a little bit of offense this year, which was good to see and good for, you know, his confidence when you know, his season's done, and hopefully we can turn him pro.
Slaggart will join the team for morning skate tomorrow, actually, against the Anaheim Ducks, but he won't be playing in that game. Head coach Luke Richardson says that he wants to have him watch a couple of clips, kind of find out where he fits on this team and how they best want to utilize him, but there's a chance we could see him this weekend, the Hawks hosting the LA Kings on Friday, and then the always fun St. Patrick's Day game on Sunday. I always say that that game and the game right before Christmas are my two favorite home games on the Blackhawks schedule. Obviously, you can't retire Chris Chelios' number and have Patrick Kane return for the first time every year. So those are the two games on the schedule that I always tend to circle. But as exciting as this is to have Landon Slaggart join the team, and I do believe that this could be a shot in the arm for the Hawks, just a whole bunch of more positivity regarding this rebuild, because for the most part, it's been leaning on Connor Bedard's progress and Alex Vlasic's surge this year in his first full year, really, here in the NHL. But the fact of the matter is, it is going to affect the roster a little bit. And Andreas Athanasiou might be back sooner than later. I know we've kind of been using that phrase the last couple of games, but Luke says the team wants to be just very cautious because, you know, it, it Athanasiou had been out for so long since November that with how little is remaining on the schedule, you don't want to rush things. You don't want to put him at more of a danger of hurting anything a little bit deeper, a little bit further. But if the Hawks get Landon Slaggard and Andreas Athanasiou by the end of this week, that kind of worries the status of guys like Zach Sanford. I don't know. Reese Johnson, we had a great convo with Reese Johnson after yesterday's win. He's always one of my favorite guys to talk to, whether before a game, after a game. Had a lot of good things to say about Colin Blackwell's hat trick, Connor Bedard's progression. He talked about his farm a little bit. All that can be found on WGNradio.com, wherever you find your podcasts. Again, we podcast every single post-game show. But Reese Johnson, Mackenzie Entwistle, Zach Sanford, those guys are fighting for playing time right now. And if Boris Kachuk were still around, that'd be the case too. There could be some movement going around in terms of keeping an extra forward on the roster. The Hawks are still sitting with just six defensemen right now. But that's because they're at home. If they're on the road, they'd probably need to bring another guy because they can't just pull somebody up from Rockford as easily. But the other thing I wonder about is, what does that mean for Lucas Reichel? Because with 17 games left, how does Lucas Reichel fit in seeing what you have in him? Because I'm wondering right now if the Hawks care more about seeing what they have in Landon Slaggard. And no, however long Landon Slaggard is here at the NHL level to finish out this year isn't going to determine, you know, the end-all be-all of Slaggard's tenure with the Hawks. I mean, just look at Reichel. Reichel had a good debut with the Hawks. And by debut, I mean his first go-around. He looked really good towards the end of last year. But for whatever reason, that hasn't clicked this season. Now, seven games with the Rockford IceHogs, Lucas Reichel has six assists. There's more consistency in scoring there than what he was doing here with the Hawks, but they still want to see that goal-scoring touch because that's what they want from him. That's what they need from him. That's what he's doing when he's at his best. So does Lucas Reichel finish out the year down in Rockford? Maybe. Because not only are the Hawks probably getting Athanasiou back, looks like they're going to get Landon Slaggard in the mix of things. Frank Nazar could be right around the corner, too. Nazar was a pick in last year's draft, I should say 2 years ago, and he's having another fantastic year with the Michigan Wolverines, won World Juniors with Team USA, and has just continued to trend upwards. And a lot of people are excited about his game, his speed, his scoring touch. And it's kind of hard not to daydream what those types of attributes from those kind of players will look like with Connor Bedard. The other thing about Reichel is there was some chemistry with him, Athanasiou, and Kurashev towards the end of last year, but Filip Kurashev is doing too many good things on Connor Bedard's line right now, so I don't think pulling up Reichel just to try to recreate that success might be worth it. So it's going to be an interesting decision for Kyle Davidson for the final stages of this regular season. All in all, though, exciting times to see what Landon Slaggard can do. Optimism that Frank Nazar could be in a Hawks sweater by the end of the season. And hopefully Athanasiou can just put that rough injury to bed, finish off on a high note this year and have more success and more consistency next season. We've got a lot of good things to talk about from yesterday's win, though. A hat trick for Colin Blackwell. Connor Bedard nearly with a hat trick. He did pick up a three-point game. Seth Jones had another excellent outing. So we'll recap that victory next. And don't forget, John Buchagross joins us after the 7:30 news, all here on Blackhawks Live, 720 WGN.
I mean, it used to be just me. I pack a bag and I go. But now I have a family, a pregnant wife, dog now, so it's a little bit more stress than maybe what it used to be. But like I said, I had, you know, really good talks with Kyle, and I said that, you know, I wanted to be, and I'm enjoying my role here, and, you know, I think I mesh really well with some of the young guys, and I really am grateful for the opportunity that I'm getting and playing here. And
really grateful for the opportunity and also just taking advantage of it. That's Blackhawks forward Colin Blackwell after his first career hat trick in the NHL. 3 goals against the Arizona Coyotes in the 7-4 victory against Arizona for the Hawks last night. I'm Joe Brand. This is Blackhawks Live. Our producer is Jack Heinrich. One of the more fun, one of the more exciting, and definitely the most offensive packed game for the Hawks this year. 3 goals for Colin Blackwell. Connor Bedard had 2. There was a moment where they were on a 2-on-1, Bedard and Blackwell, and it ended up being Blackwell shooting the puck, not quite getting the hat trick right then and there, but both of them were looking for the hattie. And it almost seemed like it was coming from Connor Bedard based on the game he had in Washington with 16 shot attempts. He just continued that aggressive shoot-first mentality. He just seems to be on another level with his puck-handling skills and evading traffic and weaving through traffic and just everything he's capable of, everything we thought he'd be capable of. But Colin Blackwell does get the hat trick, and it's actually now time to cue the shot, brought to you by Curveball Whiskey.
By the net, lost the puck to center ice. Blackwell's got it over the line and fires. He scores! It's an empty net goal and a hat trick for Colin Blackwell. The first of his career. He ices this one for the Hawks. It's now 7-4 Hawks with 2:36 left in period number 3 on the best day ever. And here come the hats.
Cue the Shot is brought to you by Curveball, the original barbecue whiskey. Join the Bonehead Nation today at curveballwhiskey.com. That's Curveball with a K. Follow them on social. They've got some cool St. Paddy's Day drinks with it coming up and a cool spin on their barbecue whiskey. Colin Blackwell with the hat trick after possibly being a trade candidate. And even though the Hawks are at the basement of the NHL standings, this is a guy that was thrilled to continue to be on the Hawks roster. It's a pretty cool story, and especially when you kind of get to know who Colin Blackwell is and what he dealt with last year, ending his season early due to a sports hernia surgery, and then taking so much time during the offseason thinking he was going to come back, but there were all these setbacks. And then as soon as he rejoined the lineup, he's been a spark plug. And again, I go back to some of the things that Reese Johnson had to say about it after yesterday's win. Reese was saying how he's proud of him because he remembers battling against him in the minors and said how his work ethic, his ingenuity can just become contagious. There's so much we can talk about Connor Bedard still, too. I feel like I did a lot of that, though, on the post-game show yesterday because his second goal was just unreal. I wish you could have seen our reaction up in the radio booth. John Weideman with a big fist pump. Troy Murray just kind of laughing. And I was just in disbelief with the way he moves around Brown and then sees J.J. Moser coming, so he just shoots the puck as quickly as he can. He really is on another level right now. And I think it's a couple of things. I think it's the chemistries brewing with Philip Kurashev and Nick Foligno. I think it's just him being back and being able to be consistently playing hockey again. And he's just gaining more confidence, too. He's got a little bit more of an edge. We've talked about that. The hit on Kane. Everything he was dealing with when playing Winnipeg. Them getting under his skin. So he's working through that frustration, too, of kind of having a target on his back and not always being able to score a goal. But it's driving him a little bit more, and I think you saw that yesterday. 4 assists for Seth Jones yesterday. I think a big reason why the Hawks' power play is looking better is because of that shoot-first mentality. When you have the right shot, I don't want to be hypocritical on what I was preaching earlier when Luke was saying there's more decisiveness coming from the Hawks lately. But Seth Jones is a lot more comfortable shooting the puck since he has come back as well. And it's just nice to see something consistent with this team right now, that being the power play. Even if they don't come up with goals against Colorado or Washington on the power play, the chances are still there for the most part. There's progression there, and then it is able to pay off when you take on the Arizona Coyotes. Again, if you look at the reverse standings, the Hawks and the Sharks are tied, 39 points. Hawks are below because of having 2 games at hand, so they have a worse winning percentage. But keep in mind, San Jose traded Tomas Hertl and Anthony Duclair. The Hawks have, again, four games against teams in the way bottom of the standings. Two against Anaheim, two against San Jose. Three games against teams that right now are not making the playoffs. Calgary, Ottawa, St. Louis. They've got three games against the Stanley, some Stanley Cup favorites, I should say. Dallas, Carolina, Vegas. And then seven games against playoff teams that, again, are playoff teams, but they're not quite at that same level. They play the LA Kings three times. They play Minnesota, the Islanders, Nashville, and Philly. Last year, we saw a surge from this Hawks team because they were just playing the kind of hockey they needed to be played. They needed to play. Taking on better opponents, tiring them out, just doing the fundamental things and catching some breaks here and there, but creating your own chances. Don't be surprised if we start to see that now in this last month of the year. There's 17 games left. It kind of looks like, with the way the schedule is, and with the way Connor Bedard is playing, and with the possible boost that the Hawks might get with Landon Slaggart, Frank Nazar, Andreas Athanasiou, a healthier defense, don't be surprised if you see the Hawks leap over San Jose, maybe go up a little bit higher, but I know Anaheim's kind of a bit of ways. But keep in mind, it is a draft lottery. I know Macklin Celebrini is a very pretty prize, but I think some of the other guys, again, I've kind of been big on Artem Levchinov of Michigan State. I feel like that could bring something that the Hawks don't quite have right now. Either way, it's a win-win, and hopefully Landon Slagger will be the latest example of this Hawks rebuild going in the right direction. John Buchagross joins us after the 7:30 news with Steve Ruxton from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Welcome back to Blackhawks Live on WGN Radio. We are thrilled to welcome in our next guest. It's John Buchagross of ESPN. You know him with the Buchagross Overtime Challenge and among many other things. John, thank you very much for taking the time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, so what was your reaction seeing John Hines pull Marc-Andre Fleury in overtime and putting that point in jeopardy?
Yeah, I certainly knew what he was doing. I knew the rule right away that you lose the point that you already had in the bank if the other team shoots it in your empty net during the overtime. But obviously, they're doing the math and didn't want to take a chance with the shootout. It's an aggressive move. Many coaches would have just kind of let it play out and then give your chances in the shootout and not, maybe give a team a real freebie off a bad bounce or something. So, it was certainly aggressive, but it was cool how it paid off. And I like that kind of unconventional thinking.
I feel like we're going to start seeing this a little bit more now in the NHL now that it actually worked. Do you think that?
Well, only at the end of the year. Obviously they're not going to do it in October, November, and December. But, come March and you're 6 points out of a playoff spot with 17 games to go like Minnesota, and you have the right personnel on the ice. Again, it's all about having the right personnel. And obviously on a 3-on-3, you're always going to have pretty much the right personnel because, the high skill guys play. So, but in that situation, it flowed nicely. It worked out perfectly. And the 4-on-3, obviously fewer bodies on the ice. It's a better chance to score than 5-on-4. So, there's still 6 points back, I think we will see this, really, I think the rest of the way, to kind of answer your question, this year. Any team, a team like, obviously, Minnesota and Seattle or in the East, Buffalo or New Jersey, you'll see them doing this if Jack Hughes is on the ice and his brother's on the ice, Luke, and then suddenly they're bringing the puck up and there's 58 seconds to go in the 3-on-3, yeah. Let's bring the goalie up. There's plenty of time to get to the bench. There's not a lot of forecheckers because there's only three skaters on the ice, and they retreat. So it really is a smart, tactical, safe play to make because it's easy to get set up, and then you have a 4-on-3 setup situation. And most of the time, you shouldn't give up an empty net goal in that situation.
Are you a fan of the 3-on-3? I am. I mean, it showcases the high talent in the NHL. It just kind of moves it to that. But I know a lot of the hockey purists don't like it. What's your take on it?
Yeah, it is what it is. We can't play all night during the regular season. You had 60 minutes to win the game. And obviously, 3-on-3 is not normal hockey. It's a whole different game. It's become more tactical, where teams regroup and keep possession. It becomes more like soccer than it does hockey. But again, it's only 5 minutes, and there's a chance like yesterday where you had that situation where a team does something different and it was very exciting. So, I'm fine because, like I said, you had 60 minutes to win the game. From there, it's really out of your hands, and you got a point, and now you either go 3-on-3 or a shootout.
All right, last thing I'll ask you on this. I don't know if that move will, move forward the thinking on this, but would you like to see the NHL switch to a three-point system for regulation wins?
Yeah, I've heard that. I would have to see that kind of play out in real time and how that works and how it affects actual play on the ice. Will there be any difference at all once you play the game? Do players really have that in their head? The teams be more aggressive in the last 3 minutes. They seem pretty aggressive to me now. Teams just don't go for the most part. The league is a fast league and offensive-minded now, so they tend to go anyway, and you tend to have those guys on the ice. Sometimes a coach will put his checking line in the last 50 seconds to preserve the tie and preserve the point. But for the most part, I don't think there just would be that big a difference in the style of play.
Talking with John Buchagross of ESPN here on Blackhawks Live. With the trade deadline all now done and passed, who do you think made the biggest splash? Was it Vegas? Was it Florida? Was it Carolina? Who do you think made out the best?
Well, those three certainly did very well. I do think Carolina, potentially did the best because they got really two top-line guys. Jake Gensel is obviously a guy who has scored 40 goals a couple of times, certainly a real secure 30-goal guy who's smart and can make a play. And Evgeny Kuznetsov is really, it's unbelievable. I called his first game on ABC over the weekend for the Hurricanes against the Devils, and he's their most talented, skilled player on the team now. And when you can add that, now again, that's different. You still have to be productive. Sebastian Aho is probably a better hockey player. He does everything good. He's not world class in anything, but he's really good at just about everything. He knows how to play hockey. He knows where to go, middle of the ice work. Kuznetsov, I'm talking just pure skill, hand-eye and stick handling and seeing the play and making a play. It's just a matter of will he be motivated and driven. And if he is, and you add Gensel, I think suddenly that team with their six really good defensemen goes a notch up in the East. The Panthers, certainly, they add a couple of pieces. Tarasenko has been known to score in the playoffs. Even Kyle Poso, Evan Rodriguez gets hurt. Now they can slide a Poso in as their reliable third liner. So those kinds of depth moves are also good. And, what Vegas continues to do, getting these big-time players, again, we'll see. Some of them are hurt. We'll see how it all shakes out. Sometimes it doesn't work when you bring new guys in. It's not a guarantee. So it's always a little bit of a risk there.
I know you're keeping an eye on the Islanders climbing their way up and moving past Detroit, but I don't know. Detroit's decision to kind of stand pat this trade deadline is interesting. I get it, but I almost feel like I was maybe expecting a little bit more from them considering they signed Kane for this 1 year. I mean, what's your thought on the latest from the Iser plan?
Well, they've done so much in the summer. Compher and Kopp, that's their second and third line center. They dealt for DeBrincat, so they really have changed their team. They just did it more in the offseason, and there's not much more they can do. Their team is kind of what it is. They don't want to trade a couple of the prospects that are on their way up. They did sign a couple of guys who, had they not been in it, they would have traded Shane Gostisbehere and David Perron because their deals are up. So had they been out, they would have traded those guys, but now they're in, so he did. I think ultimately that's probably what he was thinking, just another year. But then Kane became available, and then they kind of got hot. I still don't think Steve Yzerman loves his team, and so that's one reason why I don't know if he was really all in on this year to be aggressive. He kind of realized, I didn't think we were going to be actually that good. I got these three goalies. I didn't know really if any of them were going to be good. So I still think he's not quite where he is with this team.
It's just funny because for all the years that Chicago and Detroit were rivals, a lot of people are looking at what Detroit's doing as kind of the standard for Chicago right now. And there's already a lot of impatience going on with just supporting Connor Bedard with some more talent. I can't imagine a few years from now when you're knocking on the playoffs doors and you're just still sticking with the plan. I get it, but I can understand why fans might get a little restless about it too.
Yeah, you know, you got to get lucky in the draft. You never know, you know, if the Hawks win the lottery and they get celebrating, that just changes everything. If they don't and they pick second or third and they get a long-term project defenseman or, you know, an 18-year-old winger that's going to take 3-4 years to develop, and then, yeah, then the plan goes longer. So it really does. And then if you get a goalie who suddenly, you know, Detroit doesn't have that goalie who's really a stud. So if they did, maybe Yzerman would have been different, done something differently this year and at the trade deadline. But I think he realizes he's still got to wait here. And with a couple of the contracts go this year, he's always going to be a destination like Chicago, a free agent destination. They'll always be able to get a max player. They'll always want to go there. You know, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid go to the Edmonton Brass after this year if they get knocked out in the first round by Vegas. And they say, you know, I'm not going to sign a long-term deal here, so you should probably trade me. They would go to Chicago or they would go to Detroit. So that's why a team like the Hawks and the Wings, they have that advantage. If they ever have that slot open for that $10 million guy or can create it before the opening night of the regular season, they'll get players like that. So that's why it should be quicker for a place like Detroit and Chicago.
Wow. Don't get us too excited by saying McDavid and Draisaitl around here. People have already been floating out those names. John, with you on the national stage, you know, how do you kind of absorb all of the Connor Bedard mania? It's important to show the world what this kid can do, but, I mean, how do you guys scope on how much Bedard coverage you guys have?
You know, I mean, I was there on draft night, obviously, with ESPN, and came to our set, and then at Las Vegas for the Players Tour, when all the players fly to Las Vegas, and we were able to get a lot of content that day, a lot of sit-down one-on-one, a lot of fun stuff that you see on social media, the pregame, on-ice, effects. They get their uniform on that day. They do that all over a two-day period in Las Vegas in September, so that's a good time to meet these guys. They're pretty relaxed. Camp hasn't started yet. And so it's good to observe Connor, and I've observed him a lot during that time, the draft and there. So overall, you know, at least for ESPN and SportsCenter and really, you know, the First Takes and our other programming, we don't really talk about hockey a whole bunch. So we're not going to overexposure him at all. So if anything, he shouldn't, you know, feel that pressure from ESPN because it is what it is. And as far as games, yeah, we've shown a few of his games, but I don't think we've gone overboard with it. And I don't know how he feels. Obviously, for him, going to the local cities every week and having, I'm sure, more media than anybody else. But I imagine it's calmed down a little bit for him now, and now it's just a matter of playing hockey and producing. But overall, I think it's been a good, solid rookie year. He's shown his heart and his competitiveness, and obviously his amazing hands. And I still think he has a chance to get, like, scorching hot, have, like, a five-goal weekend somewhere. I think it's starting to come. And for a little guy who's not an explosive skater like a, you know, like a Crosby or a McDavid, he has to do it a different way. And he's going to need help. And so, like you said, this plan can't be too long. And hopefully they get lucky again this draft. And they start getting some lucky in some second, third rounders. You know, Braden Point was a third rounder. Brad Marchand was a third rounder. Those kind of Hall of Fame guys you can sometimes get in those second, third, and fourth rounds. Kucherov was a second rounder. So that's what they have to get. It's not just about Bedard. It's about those other, all these other picks they have. They have to hit on a couple of those, too.
We're finishing up things with John Buchagras of ESPN here on Blackhawks Live. You got many responsibilities over there, but I know there's been a much more singular focus on hockey since getting the rights for the games. How much fun has that been for you lately?
Oh, it's been just, you know, it's been a dream come true. You know, to work at a company for 25 years like I had a couple years ago, and usually that's when people are counting down the days to leave the company or retire or whatever. And then for us to get hockey back 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and be totally rejuvenized and re-energized, and then to get this chance to call games play-by-play, which I never had before, NHL games, that was a dream come true. You know, the first NHL game I ever did was opening night in Las Vegas, the Kraken's first game ever on ESPN.
Wow.
So that's just amazing to have that opportunity. And like I said, I feel like a little kid again. It's a craft I want to keep getting better at and improve at and hone. So it's kind of like I have that beginner's mindset of trying to do it differently and trying to do it the way that I want it to be done, and maybe just try to do something, like I said, different. So just to be able to do that, still do some studio stuff, still do the Frozen Four in college hockey, which is obviously a, a conduit to the NHL, so it helps my NHL coverage by knowing all these college guys so well. And even our reintroduction to the league, that was good, that had that base the last 10 years, all the college kids in the NHL, and 33% of the NHL is college. You know, they knew me, so they were approachable. They'd come up to me, they'd say hi, and so that really helped my reintroduction as well. They made it comfortable for me. So, yeah, it's just been unbelievable. And, you know, I'm on my way to Florida now. I got the Panthers Lightning this Saturday. So I treat every game like a Stanley Cup final game in terms of my preparation and my enthusiasm. So, yeah, it's just been so lucky to have this little at the end of my career here, 27 years at ESPN now.
What's some of the best play-by-play advice you've gotten?
Again, I don't try to ask for too much. Occasionally I do, but I just want to kind of do it, like I said, from a beginner's mindset, just to try to take it like an artist, like whether you're a musician, you know, you'll definitely borrow some things, but for the most part, whatever's inside you is going to come out. So even if you try to copy Jimi Hendrix, you're not going to be Jimi Hendrix, but part of you will come out and you know, trying to mimic somebody, but you know, you don't have to worry about copying them because it's not going to be him. It's going to be enough of you will come out. So for the most part, it's just, again, trying to look at the game and see the game and call the game maybe differently than someone else has without being a distraction. So, like I said, the kids watch the game differently. People watch the game differently. They're distracted. They're on their phone. And so I think that's part of what I'm trying to figure out. What's the best way to call a game in 2024?
John, this is great stuff, man. Thank you very much. I know you're doing a ton with the Michael J. Fox Foundation. Everything's still over at assistmelrose.com.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. AssistMelrose.com or even BucciOT.com. I started to sell some cool Melrose poker chips. Yeah, we're going to add up all the money at the end of the year and send a check to the Michael J. Fox Foundation. Just heartbreaking what's happened to Barry with his Parkinson's disease. And the man just loved hockey, gave his life to hockey, and was always so quick-witted with his mind. And of all diseases to get, this one is certainly the cruelest in my mind. To take away from that sharp wit that he had. So I miss him so much. He was my best friend at ESPN for 27 years. And, we're doing what we can, just not only to help in a small way to come up with possibly a cure at some point, but just really to honor him and what kind of man he was and is.
Yeah, you're honoring him in a great way, and we all miss him too. John, thank you very much. Have a great call this weekend.
Anytime, boys.
All right, we'll have more Blackhawks Live next, 720 WGN.
Yeah, I knew I needed a miracle to put one in, so that was nice. But, you know, it doesn't matter, obviously, how you get them. It's about getting them. So, you know, that was nice to see that one go in. I don't know how or who it went off of, but, yeah, it was nice.
That was Connor Bedard with a humble, sarcastic comment about the first goal he scored in yesterday's game, which was quite a lucky bounce, but the Hawks will take it, and it helped out a 7-4 victory. As we wrap up Blackhawks Live here on 720 WGN, Hawks next game tomorrow night. They're hosting Anaheim, 7:30 puck drop, 7 o'clock FanDuel Sportsbook pregame show right here on 720 WGN. I'm Joe Brand. Our producer is Jack Heinrich, and we've got a little bit over a minute, Jack, so what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I condensed one this week. That's okay. We just had Blackhawks Live, so there wasn't much, but just one thing that really caught my eye was the Boston Bruins goalie situation with around the trade deadline.
Yeah.
They kind of thought Linus Allmark was going to go, but he actually ended up staying. And then after their first game after the break, Allmark got the win and a 5-1 win, and you know how they do the goalie hug.
Uh-huh.
Jeremy Swayman, the backup, kind of made it like a point to, like, he like pointed at him repeatedly, and he pointed at the ice like, "You're staying here," type thing, and then the fans were going crazy and they did like their hugs. So I just thought that was kind of cool, because we talked about how it affected the Hawks players and it affects everybody. It's just kind of cool to see those two so close, and they are doing the same position.
The goalie hug is such a cool, now kind of trademark thing in Boston with those two guys, and I'm glad you brought this up because I was thinking about it coming in today. The goaltending situation has changed so much over the years in the playoffs to where a tandem is better than just one guy.
Right.
And with Allmark being moved, but he wanted to stay there even though he's not the main guy, might become a new, better attribute for goaltenders to be a team player rather than just being the guy, because mm-hmm. it's very valuable to have more than one good goaltender in the playoffs, which is kind of changing these days. Good stuff, Jack. That's Blackhawks Live. Big thanks to John Buchagross.